I think a lot of schools are really taking time to think about who it is they serve, how they serve them, and how they can best fulfill their missions going forward.
Welcome to Biblical Higher Ed Talk, where we tap into the wisdom of leaders and practitioners of biblical higher education for the advancement of colleges and universities teaching the way of Christ in the modern world. Each week, we'll tackle topics around leading your organization, expanding your impact in the world, and deepening your faith through Christ-centered conversations. Ready to make a difference in the lives of your faculty, staff, and students? Then let's begin our journey.
Today on Biblical Higher Ed Talk, I sit down with Amy Kardash, president of In Trust for Theological Schools. Amy has a front row seat to the current and future states of theological education. What's working well and what needs to change as we advance theological education? Thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Philip Dearborn, president of ABHE. And we are honored to have as our guest this week, Amy Kardash. Amy serves as the president of the In Trust Center for Theological Schools, an organization that's focused on strengthening theological schools by connecting their leaders to essential resources for mission vitality. And I've invited Amy in to talk about the current and future states of theological education, what's working well, what needs to change, as we vision the future. So, Amy, thank you for joining us today.
It's great to be here, Philip. Thanks for the invitation.
Great. So we've got some questions for you to kind of paint the picture of where we're at with theological education. Before we do that, so our audience can get to know you a little bit, tell us about a defining moment for you personally that God used in your life that kind of propelled you forward.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love this question. Thinking about that related to what we're talking about today, about theological education, I think about my call to leadership here at the In Trust Center, particularly, which was defining for me both personally and professionally, and something I did not see in my path. You know, that was not apparent to me when the search process was going on here, never once considered myself for the role. But there was the sense that God was placing the opportunity in front of me. And when I did not answer, he placed people to nudge and press me into consideration. And I think for me, what was really sort of the feeling of this is right and good was the sense of calmness throughout the search process that just said, I felt embraced and I felt that I was really responding to a vocational call to leadership. It was really clear to me that God was working through other people to place me where he thought I needed to be, even if I thought that maybe wasn't the right place or the right time. And so I've continued to think of my leadership here as a response to that vocational call as God kind of continues to press me forward to say, like, this is next, this is next. So. Yeah. And I think that's deeply connected to our conversation today.
It is. And it's amazing how God in his sovereignty uses people and circumstances to point us in a direction that perhaps on our own, we may not have gone. But yet God orchestrates all of those pieces together to move you forward. So you've been in the position for how many years then?
This is the beginning of my eighth year.
Okay. And then how many total years at the In Trust?
In Trust Center? 15.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it's been a bit.
Yeah, it has. And you survived all of the COVID stuff. We who are part of associations had to do the pivot. Those of us who are member schools for both In Trust as well as ABHE had to do all of those pivots. So let's get into some of these questions here. Paint for us, you're in a unique position where you kind of see a broader context. Obviously, you're serving mostly seminaries, theological schools throughout North America. At the broadest level, let's start with a positive. What do you see that's working well?
That's a great question. I think we do have a particular unique vantage point, and it's a privileged point to be able to see sort of the scope of the field. And what we see are various expressions of theological education. certainly there are traditional expressions that look like residential campuses, you know, formation that happens amongst living together in a more traditional setting, you know, all the way to the other end of the spectrum with fully online, you know, degree programs and everything in between. So I think what I've witnessed over the last 15 years is this evolution of the multiple expressions of theological education that look like hybrid, fully online, more traditional, contextual learning, competency-based learning, degree programs, non-degree programs, lifelong learning, continuing education, and many things in between. So I think it's fair to say there isn't a typical seminary or a typical model or mode, but many expressions. And I think a lot of schools are really taking time to think about who it is they serve, how they serve them, and how they can best fulfill their missions going forward.
Yeah, yeah. How many members would you have total within Intrust?
We have about 240 members, which include graduate theological schools. We have about 95% crossover with ATS accredited institution. Okay. But we also do have some Bible colleges, Christian colleges and universities, non-accredited organizations that also serve the field. So we about 240.
Yeah. And then are all of those in North America?
Yes. All of them are in the United States or Canada. We work with some organizations that have more of a global presence, but majority in North America.
So at the top of the list, you'd say of what's working well is seminaries, just like colleges and universities, have been able to pivot. And as they deliver their education, it's the wide spectrum. So you've got, you know, your traditional all the way to online and beyond.
Yeah, I think it's a lot about who are the seminary students. And so for some schools, that could be those that are coming to seminary right out of college. For many, it's more second career, third career. Yeah. It's someone who's exploring, you know, multiple vocations. And that requires schools to think about how they can best serve people, yeah, many of whom may need to stay in their ministry context or their work context in different ways. So I think that really has pressed schools into looking at their programs, mm-hmm, how they offer them, and their models, both their educational and their business and operational models.
Yeah. We've seen that trend too among the schools that we serve, that yes, you certainly do have a traditional age population that is active and part of the landscape of students that are being educated through our schools. But you're definitely seeing this wave of adults who have already done their undergraduate. They've been in the secular work world, and there's this kind of recall or calling that they experience to say, you know what, maybe there is something that God has for me within a ministry context, and I want to go back. And seminaries are responding to that. Graduate schools are definitely responding to the market that way, which is great to see.
I think so. And I think there's a sense that not everyone is going into pastoral leadership.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of lay leadership opportunities, but there's also people that want to just be more faithful in their practices. They're, you know, seekers. They want to go deeper into their thinking. And there are places in our schools for those individuals as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So conversely, those are some of the good things that we're seeing happen. And maybe we'll frame it in the word challenges. What are seminaries challenged with today?
So I think not unlike all higher ed, there are some challenges that are sort of just across the field that have to do with enrollment and finances. Graduate theological schools are typically very small institutions, so they're dealing with some of the same issues as much larger institutions, but with less resources and people and money. So, you know, those are sort of some clear challenges. But there are some other challenges that are being experienced in the field, or things that we're referring to as, you know, current trends that are impacting schools. Some of those are accelerated leadership transitions. So 43% of CEOs at ATS accredited schools have transitioned in the last 5 years.
Wow.
There is an increasing number of transitions happening each year. What this leads to is there's, you know, reduced tenure. So tenure, I think in all of higher ed for executives is about 6 years or under. It's a little less for theological schools, which leads to challenges related to institutional culture, related to governance issues, you know, the work of the board, things like continuity and stability for an institution. So they're all wrapped up in the leadership transition issues.
Yeah.
And there's a number of other issues. I talked a little bit about educational models, financial models. I think that schools are pressed to think about the ways in which they live out their mission, how they can be good stewards of their resources and their mission in ways that may look different than they have traditionally done so in the past. There's also a lot of stressors on people. So your people being those who live and work within your school community and those you serve. So things like stress and burnout and mental health challenges are definitely challenging our schools to think about how they best prepare students to encounter this when they graduate, but also how best to serve and support current students who are coming into seminary with some of these challenges.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you don't realize, in fact, it was interesting when you're talking, the high turnover of the presidency. We just did a study for ABHE schools, and I think we were right around 7.5 years was the average tenure. So you're saying seminaries would be a tick lower than that. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct.
So, you know, if it's tick low, you're talking in the 6 year range. That's a lot of, especially for a small school, that's a pretty significant, you know, when a new president comes in, that's a pretty significant time in an institution's life. And if they're having to do that every 6 years, the trickle down effect of that is significant of, you know, team members fitting, direction of the seminary, board engagement, strategic planning, all of those things.
Right, right. We're launching a research study this spring across boards and theological education, both governing and advisory. And one of the things that we're trying to get at is if boards are still thinking of governance as being executive focused, meaning sort of the center of it is the institutional leader, what does it mean in a period of rapid transition if that leader cannot be, you know, centric to the governance of the institution? How does the role of the board need to shift? What does it mean for governance models? So, we'll begin with the research, and then what we really want to do is think about what are the responses. How can we help schools and boards think in new ways related to governance? We could talk about boards and governance as a whole separate conversation, but it's deeply connected to the leadership transition.
So, when is that study going to be done?
So, we'll start the research in March. Towards the end of March, and we'll begin with some quantitative research, and then we'll dig into some more qualitative research, all in the hopes of identifying opportunities to better support and serve our schools.
Yeah.
Biblical Higher Ed Talk is sponsored by ABHE, the Association for Biblical Higher Education. At ABHE, bringing the love and light of Christ to the world is reflected in our drive to see our member institutions flourish, leading them to a time of success for their institution and giving them the tools and insights they need to look toward the future. Interested in learning more about membership with ABHE? Visit us at abhe.org or send us an email to membership@abhe.org. ABHE is your partner committed to advancing biblical higher education for kingdom impact. Now, back to the show.
So make me a promise when that study comes out, come back on as a guest and we can kind of talk about that. Because that's fascinating, you know, especially as it affects boards, because those of us who work with boards, boy, we hammer home the point that the board's relationship with the organization is through the president. Exclusively, right? And if and if there's a significant transition period happening with that, or a shorter period of tenure of presidents, how does that impact the board? So that'll be fascinating. Do you know how you're going to conduct that study? Like, count number of years or people, or how are you
We're partnering with ATS and an external researcher to help us with sort of the first round of surveys to kind of get a sense of what's happening in the field. And the last survey that's been across the field to board members was done just over 10 years ago. And so we know there's been a lot of shifts. And we know that because of the leadership transitions, boards probably have yet to realize the impact on their service. So we've been talking about, you know, board stickiness in what we call our Wise Stewards Initiative, that's board development. Our project leader, Rebecca Basinger, talks about the stickiness in a board and how do you create stickiness beyond current board leadership and those that are serving and beyond institutional leadership. We're starting to have those conversations, but our goal, you know, in the next 5 years is to really be able to respond to this more deeply as an organization.
Yeah. Wow. Can't wait. Really can't wait to see the results of that study. And if anything, I think it will make the responsibility of board members to be that much more complicated, meaning then that they're also going to have to find board members who can walk into that environment and be able to lead effectively.
Right. Which, you know, as I said, you know, you're well aware of this, that the challenges in calling volunteers to serve and helping them understand what their role is and isn't is just an ongoing part of board development that I know that we're both deeply involved in.
Yeah. So some of the challenges you also mentioned, which is it's interesting to hear because we hear it, I'd say primarily our audience of schools are undergraduate students. The majority of the 71,000 students who attend our institutions are undergraduate students. And one of the things we hear all the time is the mental health crisis that is. And it's interesting to hear that you're experiencing it too with an older adult population of students who are in the seminary context.
Absolutely. And I think that we're also hearing that many times graduates, those who are serving as pastors or in lay leadership or serving in their communities, don't feel well equipped to encounter and respond to mental health issues in the spaces in which they serve.
Yeah.
And so we also recognize there's only so much that can be sort of crammed in to the seminary curriculum. But what are the opportunities for that lifelong learning and continuing education? And what are the ways in which schools can be better connected to graduates to let them know, we're still here to serve you? I know that so many schools are deeply committed to that, and they want to be places where their graduates come back to for that, for deeper education, for support, for resources.
So if we pull back again and look at the seminary model, historically, definitely the seminary was very much connected to the church,
right?
And denominations and that sort of a thing. What's your current assessment of that link between the church and the seminary today? What are we doing to make sure that that stays strong?
Well, I think that essentially seminaries exist for the church. If you were to look at mission statements from a cross-section of theological schools, many of them have similar words, right? They have, you know, something along the lines of create servant leaders for the church and the world. So I think there has always been a deep relationship connection to churches, denominations, certainly varies by faith tradition, but that connection is there. I think that there are many schools that are revisiting that connection, that have been engaged in listening, inviting denominational leaders and church leaders in to say, what is it that you need from us? How can we best create graduates that will flourish in your spaces.
I think that is a critical shift that I've observed change over time, where I would even say 15, 20 years ago, the seminary was more in the position of saying to the church, this is what you need, and this is what we're going to educate, and then turn you back to the church. What you just said there is actually a reversal of it. Seminaries are going to the church and saying, hey, what is it that you need?
So I think that this is demonstrated particularly in a newer initiative over the last 3 years, which is called Pathways for Tomorrow, funded by the Lilly Endowment. The Intrust Center is co-coordinating that initiative with the Association of Theological Schools. What we found in the over 100 schools that have projects is that they are deeply based on these conversations with their church and denominational bodies. So their proposals came out of those conversation spaces. The initiative is all about preparing and strengthening pastoral leaders for Christian churches. But it required this listening opportunity to say, okay, how can we best partner? How can we best fulfill the needs in the churches? And that's not to say that there's, you know, that seminaries still aren't creating scholars and academics for the field, you know, for the academy. That's still happening. But there is an understanding that the majority of students are likely to be serving in places, either church, community, nonprofits, missionaries, chaplains, you know, where there needs to be strong connections to the church, strong connections to leaders in the faith traditions. And so I do think that there is a bit of that, you know, maybe we would call it a swing back, a recognition that this is done best in partnership, in collaboration and open communication.
Yeah, and that's totally, and I like to think about it more as a tension versus a problem. Because we're not going to necessarily solve this for whatever reason. Scholarship in the church, there's an automatic tension that's built in there. And I think it's the difference between knowledge and the practice of knowledge, right?
Right. And I think it's a constant, you know, it requires constant attention to be listening in both spaces. You know, what does the church most need from the seminary? What does the seminary need from the church? You know, I think that's always going to be at play. But what I have experienced are more schools that are engaging in those important conversations.
Yeah. And that has its impact then on some of the other things, some of the problems that we talked about, because if we're having these conversations, then one would assume then that that's going to attract or that churches are going to say to lay leaders or potential leaders within the church, hey, you know what? You show promise and we'd love to, you know, help fund you to go to seminary. So enrollments get better and hopefully the pipeline of pastors to enter these churches grows, because I know it's pretty tight right now.
Right. And for some traditions where they're really focused on contextual based learning, you know, you're already seeing that blossoming, the sense of someone is able to stay in their ministry context. Someone has said, I'm here to support them in that ministry, and they're able to access theological education to enhance their journey.
So both you and I are involved in formal theological education, which, you know, has been part of the landscape of higher education in North America, as well as Europe before us, that there was this formality associated with it. And now within the United States, we have accreditation, we have U.S. Department of Education. So we've really put a lot of structures and systems and accountabilities and all of those things in place. All of those things have costs. Cost of higher education has increased. The vast majority of the world does not have access to formal theological education. We are actually serving the minority of church leaders, potential church leaders. Talk to us about what you're doing from a global perspective. What are schools doing to realize that they're only serving such a small piece of the overall percentage of people who are going into the church context when you consider the entire globe?
I think this is connected to this growing edge of offering non-degree programs, courses, and content. And so the sense of schools, their accreditation is of degree programs,
right?
So schools have, many schools have grown their degree programs or offer different types of degrees, but many are seeing growth in this non-degree area. And that, you know, we can see that in a lot of different ways, which what's really exciting is when you see schools that are offering content in creative ways to those who would never be students otherwise. So we know that there are international students that might choose to be degree on the degree track. They may either come to the U.S. or they may stay in their context, but there are others that because of how they're ministering or their context just are not able to be part of a kind of more traditional program. One thing that we witnessed recently, we were in Dallas for a writer workshop and spent some time at Dallas Theological Seminary. And there they talked about the free courses that they offer online. Mm-hmm. They mentioned casually that they had like 650,000 people viewing their courses, you know, so we immediately sort of perked up and they talked about the fact that they just decided to offer, put something out there and see if that would be accessible and helpful. And they told some stories about users who had used content for their ministry. A particular user said they were a minister at seven churches and they had all these services each week and this content was really helpful for them. Someone who is not a traditional seminary student, likely never will be, but creating content in accessible ways that it can serve people well without the thought that that would then translate into a degree track student. That's one example of several expressions like that, that schools are experimenting with. And I think that's in response to this sense of there is a lot of demand out there. Mm-hmm. For and a lot of desire and a lot of hunger for content, for education, for direction and support. And it doesn't look like what we traditionally offer.
Right.
And that to me is really exciting because it's innovative, it's creative, and it's responsive. All the things that I think are really important. So my sense is that we'll see more of that creativity, more of an understanding that there's a growing edge over here, which is going to cause a lot of questions to be asked.
Yeah.
Institutionally, those are going to be asked by accrediting bodies. What we track, what we look at, and what we don't. But I think that it is a very hopeful space to be in, to be able to responding to a demand that otherwise would be left unmet.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to speak with Mark Yarborough about that vision, and he's raised millions of dollars to go in this direction. He is so incredibly passionate about the reality of we in the U.S. and North America are serving such a small number of the overall global need of training church leaders. So how in the world can we even address this? And I love how he is just owned it and stepped into that space. And you're seeing it, I would say, even in the last 4 years of my presidency of ABHE, we're part of ISET. And ISET has now had conversations, Michael Ortiz, for the last couple of years of the formal, non-formal theological education and how do we bridge that gap between formal and non-formal? How do we make sure non-formal stays non-formal? That formal doesn't come in and set expectations and then in the process turn it into something that's not then accessible to the rest of the world. So how do we engage all of this?
Yeah, I think these are really important conversations and they're connected to other issues as it relates to accessibility, technology. When we think about what we're comfortable with moving people into a degree track. I mean, one thing we didn't touch on was student debt, but the, you know, ever increasing costs of education and how to support that and the ways in which administrators and boards think about that as part of as they're, you know, stewarding the institutional assets. Also being mindful of what are you putting on the backs of students? You know, what are we asking students to take on? Many schools have invested, a number of resources in the area of thinking about the economic challenges of future ministers. There's been a lot of studies. There's been a lot of work in that. Schools have done and made huge progress. And yet, we still know there's an epidemic of student debt. How might we think about this other way of serving that doesn't require those who are seeking knowledge to go into debt?
I'm so happy that you all are in this space and having these conversations and helping institutions process through some of these things. It's needed as we shape, because I'm a firm believer that our system of higher education, the way it is, its trajectory is not the best. I'm not sure we can sustain the direction that we're going. Which gets to the very last question. It's almost an unfair question because we only have a minute left. Do your best in the next minute to say, what in the world does the future of theological education look like? If you were to jump in a time machine and we're there 20 years from now, what is it still there?
Yes. That's the easy answer.
And what does it look like?
So what does it look like is the harder part, right? But there's hundreds of years of history, hundreds of years of people seeking knowledge, seeking to explore their faith, seeking to know God more deeply. I don't see that changing in the next 20 years. What I see changing are how schools go about offering their curriculum, you know, as it relates to models, how they live out their mission. I think we're going to see many more partnerships. I think we're going to see acceleration of the things that we've already talked about. But those will bring about new things. So I think if I had, you know, in my last 20 seconds, I would say hope. I see lots of hope. I would say faith. I see examples of expressed faith and a desire to know and love God on every campus I visit. And for me, that is so hopeful. I continue to believe in the mission of the Intrust Center, which is all about mission vitality of those we serve.
Yeah. Yeah. So well said. So, Amy, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your experiences. We're going to have you back on to talk about that study on board governance when that gets done. If you are interested in more information about Intrust, we have put in the show description a link that you can go to the website, as well as Amy's email address if you want to reach out specifically to Amy if you have a question for her about Intrust or the work that Intrust does. So until next time, stay kingdom focused.
Thanks for listening to Biblical Higher Ed Talk. For more, follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. We're delighted that you chose to spend a part of your day with us and encourage you to reach out to us with feedback, topics, or guests for the show. You can get in touch with Philip, your host, via LinkedIn or at biblicalhigheredtalk@abhe.org. Biblical Higher Ed Talk is a production of the Association for Biblical Higher Education in association with Westport Studios. Views expressed on this show are those of the participants and may not reflect the views of ABHE or Westport Studios. Bring light and life to your biblical higher educational organization by inquiring about membership with ABHE at abhe.org. We'll catch you next time.